Please silence all electronic devices.
Members, the nurse of the day today is...
The job we have as legislators is to decide where the lines are.
It is a very sacred and holy institution.
I'll move to amend the bill. Even the old folks
in Devon knew. He said, hey, ain't you Jesse Harris? And I couldn't deny that. I said, yeah.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
While I do not believe I did anything illegal or ever thought I was doing anything illegal...
You're fired!
North Carolina General Assembly Act.
Any further discussion or debate?
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. The NBA takes a big swing at North Carolina, and Governor Pat McCrory swings back. We are in between conventions, and some North Carolina Republicans may still be hitching a ride back from theirs. And Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are about ready to launch strategies they hope will win the state. I'm Dave DeWitt, Managing Editor for News here at WUNC, and I'm here with Jeff Tiberi, Capitol Bureau Chief.
And then there were two.
Let's start in Charlotte, Jeff. The NBA pulled the 2017 All-Star Game, and that launched really what's been now about a day and a half of blame. Who is to blame for this, Jeff?
Who's to blame? That's a loaded question. Trying to get me in trouble. There will then be one if
That's
I
right.
perhaps, you know, assign blame to this whole thing.
Let's start off easy.
The blame goes all over the place, right? It's the city council's fault for passing this ordinance, for passing this radical ordinance. It is the state's fault for passing this discriminatory measure. It is the federal government's fault for stepping in and being involved and trying to usurp the state's power, which in essence is what the state did with the local authority on some level. I don't know whose fault it is.
Liberal media?
It's definitely the liberal media's fault. This is the I don't know whose fault it is. It is a huge loss for the city, right? Because this, you've covered an NBA All-Star game before.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to one of these events, but having watched many of them on TV, this is not only a basketball event, this is a cultural event. This is a
right.
It's hip-hop culture, it's African-American culture, it's hoops culture. I mean, this is, according to a study from the University of New Orleans a few years ago, after New Orleans hosted an All-Star game, it appears they might be getting this next one. It's a $100 million economic impact for a city, and it would have been, I mean, from a little bit more nuanced of a place, Charlotte had a basketball team. They lost it. They got it back. I mean, they've struggled as a fan base
right.
to some extent. This would have been a big event, a very big event to have.
Yeah, because Charlotte's not getting the Super Bowl. Charlotte will never host a World Series.
Or a Final Four.
So this is really about as big of an event you can get awarded to you from outside the state.
Mm-hmm.
The state of North Carolina has hosted an NHL All-Star game, but that that's a little bit of a smaller event. It
right.
doesn't have as much of a culture impact at all. And for Charlotte, it's important because I'm really skeptical of these economic impacts of this.
You are.
But from a marketing standpoint, this would help the city of Chicago not at all. Houston, New York,
minimal,
LA,
right.
those cities are established, big enough,
right.
whatever. But a city like Charlotte, a city like New Orleans, you
mm-hmm.
mentioned. This kind of thing impacts them greatly because you get on national networks, people say your name, you get the blimp flying over. Those are big deals for a city like Charlotte. So pulling it from that is a big deal. I'm more interested, though, in sort of the reaction we've seen since then,
right?
Especially from Governor Pat McCrory speaking on WFAE this morning as we are recording this here later in the morning on a Friday. You see him really hitting hard at the NBA for doing this. He really hit hard at PayPal when they pulled out after HB2. And if I'm a CEO and I'm sitting back or I'm running a league in the NCAA and I look back and I say, all right, I don't know that I want to enter this fray, but if I do, I know that at whatever negotiations occur, if they don't go well, I could really get slammed at the end of this. And I wonder then, is this a kind of a business-friendly environment that Governor Pat McCrory has always tried to promote?
Right. Those two words, I was going to get to them. You beat me to it. Business friendly. This is what we heard so frequently on the campaign trail 4 years ago. He wanted to create a business friendly environment, culture,
right.
place.
And he had that reputation as mayor of Charlotte.
He did. His statement, so he did this interview with WRAL Friday morning. The statement that the governor released yesterday, Thursday evening, doesn't mention anywhere in the statement House Bill 2, or the NBA. It starts with the sports and entertainment elite, Attorney General Roy Cooper, and the liberal media have for months misrepresented our laws and maligned the people of North Carolina simply because most people believe boys and girls should be able to use school bathrooms, locker rooms, and showers without the opposite sex present. I didn't realize the sentence was that long. That's the end of the quote. The statement keeps going. But
right.
From a, let's step back a second. In this election year, with these two candidates who are presidential candidates who are as disliked, and we'll talk about them in a few minutes, Trump and Clinton, Governor McCrory was elected 4 years ago with some Democratic votes, mm-hmm. with some independent votes. This, and I'm going to call it thin-skinnedness, is ultimately what it is. For the governor to not find a more centrist viewpoint on this, to not find a little bit more middle of the road, to take a path that tries to encompass mm-hmm. both sides, is, and I'm no political expert, it's baffling to me.
And we saw
is
that from the NBA.
Is he trying to get reelected or not?
Yeah, we saw that from the NBA, but we also saw it from Speaker Moore in his statement.
Right.
It was much more centrist and looking forward and hopeful that they can find some common ground. Whereas Pat McCrory's statement and what he said this morning is absolutely not. As a matter of fact, he accused the NBA of not reading the bill. Now, you can argue that the NBA made a wrong or right decision.
Sure.
But the NBA central office is chock full of attorneys.
Oh, and very good
who
ones.
Who are looking for opportunities to read bills instead of other things all the time.
Right.
You know, Adam Silver himself has a law degree. He's a brilliant guy, Duke graduate. He's making some steps, whether you agree or don't agree. He's not making these off the cuff. He's citing a lot of people. There's a lot of attorneys who are involved in this. And to say the NBA didn't read the bill is, I think, a misread at the least.
Right. And to insinuate that the NBA is careless or flippant in its decisions, juxtaposed to the lawmakers here in this state, is kind of silly, right?
Right.
Now, you mentioned Tim Moore. Here's the – just to share this – release from Speaker Moore that came out about less than an hour after McCrory's yesterday. This is what Speaker Moore, the head of the North Carolina House, a Republican from Cleveland County, somebody who, by the way, isn't running for statewide office, might be at some point, but not right now. He doesn't need to channel that middle road as much as McCrory does now in terms of electability. Speaker Moore said, "I am disappointed to learn of the NBA's decision to move its All-Star game away from Charlotte. While the city itself set the forces in motion that ultimately led to this outcome, it is unfortunate that Charlotte will not be hosting this event next year. We will continue to advocate that North Carolina is a great place to live, do business, and to visit, and will not let the decision on one event dampen our efforts to continue moving North Carolina forward." End quote. That is the much closer, right, to the middle of the road.
Right.
That's a reasonable statement. That is not name-throwing and... That's not throwing shade at anybody.
That's right. He's not fighting this in the media. He's not going to fight this in public. You know, he may have different words for the NBA in private. We
right.
don't know. But Governor McCrory seems to have a very different attitude about how to attack this. Now, like you said, he's running for office. You fully expect Roy Cooper to make a lot of hay out of this between now and November. You know, the NBA is leaving open a window to possibly come back in 2019 with the All-Star game. But things would have to change, they say.
Right. One would think that they would probably not want to be insulted by the governor.
Right. And CEOs are watching this, other sports leagues,
yeah.
the NCAA, who hosts some events here. You know, Duke has already lost a home game against the University of Albany.
Coach Hay called this embarrassing. That was his
right.
quote. He said this is an embarrassing.
And Mike Krzyzewski is not a political person. Mm-hmm. He once hosted a fundraiser for Elizabeth Dole, and that's as far as he's ever gotten. He does not in the business of entering mm-hmm. into these phrases, and he called it embarrassing. Mark Gottfried at NC State went even further, basketball mm-hmm. coach there, went on and said he is embarrassed when he has to explain to recruits' families what this is all about.
Right.
So, look, there are people in the middle of the road, as you were saying, who are falling one way or the other on this, and most of them are just – they don't want to be embarrassed.
Right.
And this is an embarrassment, and it's hard to imagine it not landing on the governor.
To that point – This is the doubling, the tripling, the quadrupling down of the defense of House Bill 2. And what November has come and become in many ways from a state standpoint is a referendum on HB 2.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see polls, I'm sure, over the next 3 months indicating to what extent it is a driver, getting people out and how it affects their ballot choices. Clearly, that's some of the motivation for Governor McCrory and folks who continue to defend this. It is, we're going to rile up the base. We're going to get people. We're going to come out. We're going to get people to come out and support us on this. That's what they're banking on.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll wait till November 8th to get the perhaps the final word on that. But it seems like it's a tall task. It's a big ante up, if you
right.
will.
And what will be interesting to see is who wins the messaging communication.
Right.
Because if it becomes about the LGBTQ community, you know, we go back to Amendment 1 mm-hmm. a couple years ago, that would favor Republicans. If it becomes about we are now not business friendly, we are now a laughingstock within the country and internationally,
right.
then that's a different message that will resonate differently with that sort of moderate voter who's going to make the decision
sure.
really in so many of these races. Okay, talking about moderate voters, let's mm-hmm. move on to the next topic. The Republican convention is over as we're recording this. The Democrats begin Monday. We watched a lot of convention coverage this week.
I listened. Admittedly, I didn't watch any. I listened.
I watched. I watched the PBS NPR version, which was probably the same as what you were listening
right.
to.
Yep, same feed.
Watching it doesn't add a whole lot of knowledge to it, so we probably are coming from the same place. But, you know, there's a lot of convention analysis that is out there. If you came here for that, that's probably not your first interest. But it did strike me in a certain way, and I'm curious what you thought watching some or listening to some of that.
talking about going down to one. It was a dumpster fire in some regards, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a great snapshot of some of the fractures, the ongoing continued fractures within this party, within a party that right now we should note is incredibly powerful on a state level. They have 30 trifectas, power in both chambers at the state level and governorships. And the Republican Party has, excuse me, the Republican Party has this deal of power across state bodies. But at the national level, you know, they've lost two elections and they had 17 candidates start this thing a year ago or over the, you know, the past 9-12 months. And it ended up with the most unlikely of candidates. The whole thing is bizarre. The infighting, the booing. I think the Ted Cruz speech stands out as one of the more memorable moments of the convention in Cleveland for me, in part because I thought it was so interesting that people were afterwards saying, I can't believe it. I can't believe what Ted Cruz did. This is stunning. This is shocking. Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, is perhaps the most obstructionist U.S. senator that the nation has ever seen.
Right.
He has been crapped on by Donald Trump. He has been in a fight with Donald Trump for months.
Trump attacked his wife and his father.
Right. Cruz has given no indication that he was going to endorse Donald Trump. The remarks that he made on Wednesday night, mm-hmm. were the remarks he released. There were no surprises in this. I was surprised at the level of surprise, at the level of shock and, we're stunned at, you know, Ted Cruz not falling into – this is a guy who led to the shutdown of the government. Like, that was to be expected.
Right.
And clearly he's banking on 2020 being an opportunity for him.
Yeah.
So that was one. I mean, it was these are a love fest.
Yeah. I've covered one of these conventions.
Okay.
In 2012, I covered the Democratic convention in Charlotte, was on the floor, was walking around, was in the hotel with the NC delegation, all of that. Right. And these things, while there is, it's like a treadmill. There's a lot of activity. People are churning their legs. There's lots going on, but you don't really get anywhere. If you get anywhere, it's a little bit more cohesive, usually, coming out of the convention. You get a little bump in the polls. There's no cohesion factor here.
No.
It doesn't seem the Republican Party is any closer together. And there was one incident that I think sort of captured that.
Right.
In North Carolina, Chairman Robert Hayes, a Republican chair here in North Carolina.
Former congressman.
Uh-huh. He has a private plane, apparently, and he flew to Cleveland with some other members of the Republican Party. He asked a couple of those folks what they thought of Ted Cruz's speech. Both of them said, I thought it was a pretty good speech. And he kicked them off the plane and made them hitch a ride to come back. That shows you not only just nationally there's a level of incohesion. Is that a word, incohesion?
Yeah,
a lack of cohesion.
Now, on the podcast.
A lack of cohesion among Republicans, but it is true in the state. And that is interesting to me because we're about to see more than 100 days of campaigning.
Yeah.
And North Carolina is one of just a handful, five really,
right. Five
toss
big
up
toss
states.
Up states. Right.
And we're going to see a ton of activity here.
I've interviewed Robin Hayes before. I've met him a couple of times. I'm not trying to cast any shade or cast any negative aspersions on him as a leader and what he's doing. I mean, he felt like that was the best thing for him to do, or maybe it was an emotional reaction. I don't know. But from a leadership standpoint, knowing in almost likelihood in today's day and age of social media, and I mean, you've been at a convention, I have not. There are media members everywhere. You've got to be a little more aware of that, right? You're kicking a delegate off your plane.
Right.
Because you didn't agree, not because
he had to know that was going to be that story was going to get told.
Right. It's not as though they committed a crime. It's not like they were trying to take something illegal onto the plane, or they did something so. I understand the convention is about party unity and coming together. These two delegates didn't agree. There's been plenty of that.
Right.
It seems like a fairly short-sighted move on his part to boot a delegate off.
Right.
But what does he do? I mean, so these two delegates are not buying into party unity by saying they liked the Cruz speech. Well, Hayes is, you know, he's just compounding that, right, by saying, okay, take the bus back.
Right, which we don't know, at least the article I read, which was in the Charlotte Observer, we don't know Robin Hayes' side of this. And so maybe it was something else. Maybe their luggage was too heavy. We don't know exactly why.
That's very fair. That's fair.
This is one-sided. It's one person saying, this is why I got kicked off this plane. So there is that. Maybe he had a different reason. But it does get to the lack of cohesion, and it does get, I think, a little bit to – you did a feature that was really interesting this morning about strategies and what the different campaigns – how are they going to strategize in North Carolina? It was you made this point in the feature. It is an incredibly close race. The last two elections for president, it's going to be even, some people say, closer this year. You know, let's talk about – I want to play that feature at the end of the podcast, but – what did you learn from that in talking to some folks who've run statewide campaigns here and people who poll? What are the strategies going to be for the Democrats and Republicans, and what could be effective and what might not be?
It's a character race, not an issue race, which comes at the surprise to very few, I imagine. I chatted with Carter Wren, who is a longtime Republican strategist, worked for Jesse Helms for a long time, did some work with, I believe, Pat Buchanan later on after Jesse Helms retired from the U.S. Senate from North Carolina. And what he talked about were driving up Clinton's negatives, driving up attacks on Clinton, and also trying to find a positive within Donald Trump's resume, repertoire, persona, whatever it may be, to try to gain a greater level of comfortability with swing voters. He said, how you do that? I don't know. You could spend a month thinking about it. And that wasn't meant as much of as an insult toward Trump as Carter and Donald don't know each other. But he said that's one approach. On the flip side, and let's be clear with both of these, I think what is a bit of an outlier, in addition to the fact that they're so disliked, is that they're so public, and they've been so public for so long. Like, if we think back to 2008, sure, John McCain had been in the Senate for a long time. He's a POW. I think a lot of people knew his story. John McCain wasn't a former First Lady, Senator, Secretary of State, this very well-known public figure, or this media mogul, this well-known, renowned businessman who puts on these beauty pageants.
Reality star, too.
Reality star, too. McCain-Obama in 08, right?
Right.
It's very different, I think, with both of these people because they're so well-known and they're disliked to a larger extent than we've seen.
So you've got to make one of them seem just a little less, disliked.
Right.
You've got to make them a little more palatable,
right,
just slightly more palatable than the other. And that might sway the suburban voters that are going to make this decision.
Right. And the Democratic strategist I talked to is a guy named Gary Pierce, who worked for Governor Jim Hunt for a number of terms. He's actually a former newspaper hack, worked at the News and Observer way back when. And he said, both of these guys were very nice. They were great. They had a lot of information, a lot of knowledge and stories to pass along. He used the word savage in terms of an approach. He said, I would savage Donald Trump. Just again, in terms of the attack ads, in terms of going at what he has presented himself as. He talked about this most recent ad, one of the most recent ads the Clinton camp has unveiled, which has children like lying on the floor, appearing to be watching a television screen. And then in the background, you're hearing, and then you see some of Trump's clips about, if I shot somebody on Fifth Avenue, I wouldn't lose any votes, so on and so forth. And Pierce, the Democratic strategist, was saying that this plays well with suburban mothers.
Right.
And what we've learned from 8, 12, 14, the Tillis Hagen race, is that this is the sect of the population. This is a small slice of people suburban moms living in Mecklenburg County, living in Wake County, and these are kind of the Play-Doh areas, if you will, of this election. These are the people that can be pulled or, mm-hmm. or morphed into either side, and they're the ones that, by and large, will have a big influence on deciding what happens in North Carolina.
Right, and it's going to be, you know, we talked to you talk about that, but also, you know, as far as I can tell, Trump has one paid staffer in this state.
Right. So, and quickly, one point Carter made when I asked him about that was he said he thinks that the Republican National Party, that the Republican effort, not Trump's mm-hmm. specific effort, but the party effort, they have people here working right. on get out the vote efforts and other things.
The other thing we're going to see this a lot, and we always see it, and voters always say, you know, I hate attack ads. I hate seeing all these things on the TV, but they work.
They work more than anything.
And everybody will tell you that runs these campaigns, they work. And even though people say they hate them, they are effective. You're going to see them. I can't imagine them getting even more heated, more fear-mongering.
They have to. How much of that 73-minute speech did you listen to last night?
A good chunk.
Yeah. I listened to the whole thing, and I was reminded at the end, I have to work in a random movie reference here. I was thinking, why am I still watching this thing? And there's this funny scene from the movie Private Parts 20 years ago about Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. And Paul Giamatti is some radio guy. He works for WABC or NBC, whatever it is in New York. And he's meeting with some boss. And he's like, why do people keep listening to Howard? And the guy says, well, Howard's average fan listens for an hour and a half. And they had done a poll and said, most common response, I'd like to hear what he says next.
Yep.
And Giamatti says, well, what about the people that hate him? What about the people that don't like Stern? And the other guy says, well, they listen on average for 2.5 hours. Most common response, I want to hear what he says next.
Yep.
And like, that's what it is with Trump. But that speech last night was, it was perfect for where he, what he has said and how he's run this campaign for the last year or so.
Yep.
I mean, it was a dark speech that was all about
fear.
All about fear.
Yep.
And it's about restoring safety. And he made some bold promises. He made some promises I don't know if God could keep.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk a lot more about it. It is going to be a topic for another 100-some-odd days. But that'll do it for today's WUNC Politics Podcast. Jeff, thanks.
Enjoy the weekend.
Make sure to subscribe to the WUNC Politics Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and on something that Jeff says is called Stitcher. Follow all the WUNC Politics stories on air and online. Now let's hear Jeff's story on the presidential political strategies to expect this campaign season.
The Republican National Convention in Cleveland has concluded. Next week, the Democrats will nominate their candidate in Philadelphia. Then it's on to the final 3-month stretch of this ultra-marathon race. North Carolina is a swing state and expected to be a regular part of the political terrain through November. Jeff DeBerry reports on how some local voters could ultimately make the difference in the race to be the 45th president of the United States.
In 2008, only Missouri had a presidential contest that was closer than North Carolina's. 4 years ago, just Florida was decided by fewer votes.
I think it's quite possible that we end up being the closest state this year.
Tom Jensen is the director of Public Policy Polling, a national firm based in Raleigh. For 3 decades, North Carolina was a Republican stronghold in the presidential race. Not anymore. Their most recent data shows Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton tied here. Other recent polls show our state among 4 that are currently a toss-up.
I think what's 100% going to end up deciding the race in North Carolina is what ends up happening in the suburbs of Wake County and Mecklenburg County.
Meet the swing voters, many of whom are transplants from blue states like California, New York, and Connecticut. They're largely independents and mothers. Pollsters say they altered the election here in 2008 and 2012. Carter Rent is a longtime GOP strategist. He calls them an interesting group.
They don't really like either party. They don't really like politicians. They're fiscally conservative on values. They're religious. But on the other hand, government programs like education, Social Security, Medicare, they're very supportive of. So it's sort of a group of people that don't fit into any political boxes.
Wren first worked on a campaign in 1972, helping Jesse Helms get elected to the U.S. Senate. He's not working for Donald Trump. Asked what he would advise the Republican nominee to do in order to win that slice of suburban voters and North Carolina, Wren said attack ads and another tactic.
Some positive introduced about Trump that gives the undecided voter some comfort with them. They're never going to embrace Trump, but they need to be a little more comfortable with him than they are right now.
Wren says politics is all about messaging, and if Trump's campaign chooses to sell a layer of comfort, it must be done genuinely. Tyrant Trump and crooked Clinton amount to the most disliked presidential finalists on record. This is more a character race than an issues election. Gary Pierce is another longtime political operative. He worked for Democratic Governor Jim Hunt during his four terms in office. Pierce is not working for Clinton, but offered his approach at how he would help her cause.
The easiest way to win an election is to just destroy your opponent. And there has never been an opponent who invited it as much as Trump does and makes himself vulnerable to it in the way he does. So that's what I'd be telling her.
Clinton's campaign debuted TV ads here earlier this month. One features some of Trump's most bombastic comments as children appear to be watching a TV screen.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
And you can tell them to go themselves.
You know, you can see there was blood coming out of her.
Trump
eyes.
Has not yet run any TV ads in the state. Pierce calls Clinton's 30-second spot incredibly effective.
That goes right at that suburban, independent woman. It goes right to this fear that there's something about Donald Trump. There's a cruelty or a bullying or a meanness to him that I really don't want to see in the White House.
The rhetoric has likely grown repetitive for many of you. And while another scandal, an October surprise, or as Wren put it, the hand of God, could still play into this race, there are more than 100 days between now and the second Tuesday in November. Again, Tom Jensen, the pollster.
If you're somebody who's really a political junkie, it's an exciting time to be a North Carolinian because we've never been this important. If you're somebody who gets sick of the ads, gets sick of having to see the candidates on TV here all the time, all I can really say is buckle up. It's going to be a long 3.5 months.
On Monday, Donald Trump is scheduled to visit Winston-Salem, and Hillary Clinton will be in Charlotte. Jeff Tiberi, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.